This Israel report is brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands. If you have dreamed of owning a property in Israel, close to the sea or close to the center of Tel Aviv, now is your chance to make it a reality. The Blue Agency is happy to announce that they are in South Africa to discuss new property opportunities in Israel. For a private meeting with Barry Cohen to discuss your Israeli property or any Israeli property needs, WhatsApp him on 076-577-2000. That's 076-577-2000. The Blue Agency. Your Israeli property is in good hands.
The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, Boker Tov, good morning. How are you?
Boker Tov, of course, the fast day today, the day before Purim. And for me, definitely the quote of the day needs to be attributed to US President Donald Trump, who was meeting at the White House with the Irish Prime Minister. And I'm not exactly sure how the conversation went in that direction, but at some point Trump decided that he needed to talk about Democratic Senator Chuck Schumer, who has been advocating very much for Palestinian rights. And in Trump's words, Schumer used to be Jewish. Now he's Palestinian.
Oh, my goodness.
I just wonder whether Trump has the right to deny people their Jewish heritage and to claim that they're Palestinian. And of course, we all know that by saying that he was trying to insult Chuck Schumer rather than praise him. But the term now he's Palestinian meant as an insult has had some quite interesting consequences. So I just wonder what listeners think about that pronunciation of Schumer used to be Jewish. And of course, right on the eve of Purim, we remember some of the anti-Semitic acts that were committed in the past. And the fact is that anti-Semites, as a general rule, like to err on the side of caution and pronounce people to be more Jewish than they really are, just so that they can commit acts of anti-Semitism against more people rather than fewer people. And in the Purim story, Haman, of course, is the main protagonist, the main anti-Semite in the story, and he's often linked to Amalek as another group who were anti-Semitic in a slightly different era. And I think I've even read that there's some sort of blood link that people have drawn between Amalek and Haman. And then we kind of fast forward to the current day, and we think we know who the modern day Haman is, who the modern day Amalek is. And of course, that title is attributed to the Hamas and to other people, who groups like that, who are anti-Semitic. But I think that the modern day Haman is more like some of those Columbia University professors who have somehow weaseled their way into the system, managed to somehow gain the ear of the decision makers and of the influencers of the day, and then use that power in order to promote their anti-Semitic agenda. For me, that is the typical epitome of Haman and who he was and how he operated. So that's my view on Purim for the day.
Yeah, especially trying to make it the Columbia story all about freedom of speech, which of course it isn't, because he only values his own freedom of speech. He certainly doesn't value anybody else's, not for one second.
Well, I think that freedom of speech is not only about being allowed to state what you think and what you wish to say. I think that there's obviously that's part of it. I think the other part about freedom of speech is also being willing to listen, not only just allow people to say what they want, but being willing to listen to what they say and allow them to say it publicly. And I think that, you know, that really is the typical freedom of speech. On an entirely different subject, just another little snippet, the interesting news is that we finally had a sign of life of Noa Argamani's partner from Gaza. She, as we will remember, was kidnapped from the Nova music party, and she was there with her partner. And it's for the first time in 554 days that we finally heard that there are signs of life from him. One of the other released hostages has said that they did actually see him in central Gaza being held, we understand, in some sort of a refugee camp in central Gaza. And we understand that Avi Natan, or who was being held under quite difficult circumstances, we use that word difficult with inverted commas around it, because finally we do know that Avi Natan, at least for some of the time, at least up until the time that he was seen there, was alive, has been alive, we believe is alive, and now we have a sign of life. So this has energized Noah and some of the other hostages into really being active. And one of the things that has really surprised me, is how much energy those former hostages have when they are released from Gaza. They come out, they spend their week or 10 days or 2 weeks in hospital recovering, meeting their family, getting more acquainted with the world that we're in right now. And then they go out on the road and they are campaigning. And Agam Berger, for example, has come out to encourage people to hear the Megillah at Hostage Square.
Come to Hostage Square,
she says.
Wow. Can you imagine going to hearing the Megillah at Hostage Square? It's like,
so that's, you know, Agam Berger. And we've seen others who've traveled directly almost from Gaza to the hospital, from the hospital to the White House, to the United States, to other parts of the world in order to promote the story. I really have immense, immense respect for the efforts that they're going to. And I think that it shows us how much effort we need to go to. We haven't been through their ordeal. We haven't had to suffer the psychological and physical torment that they've been through. Look how much energy they've got to campaign for the remaining 59 hostages remaining in Gaza. I think that that should energize all of us to do whatever we can in order to bring them home. 524 days is way too long.
Absolutely right. More information has emerged about Israel's attack on Syria on Tuesday night. What more do we know?
I mentioned this in passing yesterday, that there had been some reports about an attack by IDF forces in Syria, an air attack by the Israeli Air Force. And in fact, the IDF actually released some footage and some details about this airstrike that was carried out during the night on Tuesday. Most of it was focused in southern Syria. There were some attacks that even went further in to the north of Syria, nearer to Damascus and even to other parts of Syria. We understand from what the IDF have told us is that 22 fighter jets were used in this attack in order to carry out the strikes against what we understand to be military facilities and centers that were holding weapons, were holding vehicles, were holding other armaments, all now in the hands of the new Syrian regime. And this is an interesting statement, because at the moment we're seeing the new president of Syria, al-Julani, being received at the European Union, being received on the international stage. He was once upon a time labeled as a member of ISIS, and he was labeled as a terrorist. And now he's suddenly been through a massive cleansing process. And out of the other side, he comes and he lands up on the international stage. And it's ironic that he can go along to the European Union in Brussels. But if Prime Minister Netanyahu would go to the European Union in Brussels, he would be subject to an arrest order because of the ruling by the International Court of Justice placing the claim against him and demanding that he be arrested by countries who are participants in the International Court of Justice. So that is the ironic situation that we find ourselves in. Israel is saying something slightly different. All fine and well that he's being received on the international stage and he's being hailed as something of a hero because he happened to come in at the right moment, much of it facilitated, by the way, by Israeli military actions. We can talk about that at a separate time. But he's come in and now he's sort of in this heroic situation where he's being received. But Israel is saying, we are still very skeptical about the intentions of the Syrian government. We don't necessarily believe that they have friendly intentions at all. We are very suspicious of what they may do once they are bedded down. We don't like the fact that they have all of these arms and ammunitions and weapons and vehicles at their disposal, because we feel that that is a threat to our national security, because that Syrian government, the same one, the same Syrian president who's being received all over the world, may well turn himself towards Israel and potentially use that in order to create some sort of a security threat to Israel. And as a result of that, Israel has decided to seize the opportunity now and has decided to strike what has been described as dozens of sites which are linked to the Syrian military. It involved more than 60 munitions against radar installations, against surveillance equipment used for aerial intelligence gathering, against command centers, military facilities, weapons, vehicles, as I've said before. It was a very, very extensive attack that was carried out, obviously well planned with lots and lots of intelligence. So this is Israel's message, that even though things in Syria are very, very different now, and because of the evilness of the previous regime, people are now looking at this new regime as being some sort of a heroic welcome regime. But these are people who are potentially very dangerous, and Israel is taking absolutely no chances.
A youth was injured in a terror attack yesterday, and that's near to Ariel. IDF activities continue in Judea and Samaria. What's this all about? How serious is this threat?
Well, I think that the threat within our borders should never be underestimated. And even though we consider Hamas and Hezbollah and potentially the Houthis from outside of our borders to be our major threat, and we build fences and we put barriers up and we arm our borders as much as we can in order to keep that threat out, there is a threat from within, and that is a threat that has been addressed in recent weeks and months much, much more significantly. And that threat is not only limited to the Palestinian Authority area, which takes up part of Judea and Samaria, but indeed yesterday, for example, we saw some IDF activities taking place in the Israeli Arab town of Tira, which is right within our borders, and it is probably 10 kilometers or so from Kfar Saba in central Israel, right within our territory. That is a threat, a real threat that comes from within. And under the cover of this war, and with all the dust circulating, which potentially shields out a lot of the attention, the IDF has been taking a lot of action, not only after the terror attack that took place, an 18-year-old was moderately injured when he was shot near to Ariel yesterday. And that has been confirmed to have been a terror attack. But indeed, Israel has been concerned, very concerned, about the building of terror infrastructure from within Israeli towns and cities. And it raises up a very, very interesting discussion about Israeli Arabs and where their loyalty really lies and to what extent they present a threat to us by shielding potentially Hamas, Hezbollah, other terrorist organizations who might want to try to hide within their communities and use that as a springboard to attack Israel almost from within. And the danger is that we really don't have any boundaries or borders between, let's say, Tira and Haifa, Tira and Kfar Saba, or Tira and Netanya, or Tira and Tel Aviv. People who live in Tira are Israeli citizens who are allowed to travel freely around Israel. There is no requirement from Tira to go through any military checkpoint in order to come to Kfar Saba, to come to Ra'anana, to come to Tel Aviv, to come to Petah Tikva or Rosh HaAyon or any other of the towns and cities around that area. So this is a real threat that the IDF have been trying to take care of through their activities in not only in Tira, but of course further afield in Jenin and in Tulkarem and in other Arab towns and cities. This, I think, is an underestimated, underreported threat that the IDF, of course, is well aware of. and has been doing whatever it can right now to take care of it, because there is obviously an opportunity that presents itself right now for us to be able to somehow root this particular threat out.
Before I let you go, it's a Purim, of course, over the weekend all around the world, but how is this being celebrated in Israel?
Well, Purim this year is what they call Purim Meshulash, a triangular Purim. And the reason why we call it a triangular Purim is because whereas we around the world and in most towns and cities in Israel celebrate Purim on the 14th day of the Hebrew month of Adar, which happens to fall out tonight and tomorrow, in Jerusalem, they celebrate what's called Shushan Purim, which is on the following day, the 15th of the month of Adar. And the reason for that is because we are told that in Shushan, which was the capital of Persia at the time that the Purim story was played out, we understand that in Shushan, things took a day longer to settle down, and that the Jews in Shushan celebrated their freedom a day later than the Jews in the remaining part of Persia at the time. And for that reason, pronouncement or the decision was made that in cities which had walls around them at the time of Joshua, and you will all go and check exactly why this has been decided like that, but for cities that had walls around them, as did Shushan at the time, they would celebrate Purim on the day after everybody else, which is called Shushan Purim. Now, of course, this year, Shushan Purim falls out on Shabbat, and we will not celebrate Purim and or Shushan Purim on Shabbat. So as a result of that, in Jerusalem, we have this kind of strange situation where, even though on Friday evening, they do introduce certain celebrations and certain traditions that are related to Purim. Really, the suda, the meal, the Purim meal, and the swapping of mishlochei manot, the presents that are given from one to another, is only really done on Sunday. So here we will celebrate Purim for most of Israel tonight and tomorrow into Friday. And in Jerusalem, they will have this kind of two-day system where they will celebrate ultimately on Sunday. Interestingly, some other towns and cities around Israel, like Hebron, for example, we're not sure whether they had walls around them at the time. So many people in Hebron will celebrate Purim on both days in order just to be sure, just so that they can't miss out on an opportunity. But of course, it's my wish that everybody will have a Purim Sameach, but that we will also be able to remember the significance of Purim to us, even in our modern day. There is a lot to think about.
There is absolutely a lot to think about. Anthony Reich, thank you as always. Wishing you a Purim Sameach, wishing you a Shabbat Shalom, and we'll catch you on Monday morning for the Israel Report at 7:45.
That Israel Report was brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands. If you have dreamed of owning a property in Israel, close to the sea or close to the center of Tel Aviv, now is your chance to make it a reality. The Blue Agency is happy to announce that they are in South Africa to discuss new property opportunities in Israel. For a private meeting with Barry Cohen to discuss your Israeli property or any Israeli property needs, WhatsApp him on 076-577-2000. That's 076-577-2000. The Blue Agency, your Israeli property, is in good hands.